Empire of the Sun.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined, as always, by Kevin Zierman. Hello, Kevin.
We're counting down the days, aren't we? We're finally counting down the days.
Are we ready to officially elect this draft season? Are you ready with the SZN fully intact?
I was making a, like, the world might be ending joke, but okay. The draft, yes.
It's not for another, like, what, month and a half? Whatever. Wait, is the election before or after the draft? I guess that's what we should know if we should waste our time with prepping for the draft before that or after that.
Yeah, let's just leave now. Like, we're done, yeah. No more work.
We will not be leaving you now. We are officially – I'm going to officially elect a draft season if Kevin won't, with the SCN intact and all. So essentially what we've been doing, if you've been listening, if you haven't been listening, we've been – I don't want to say briefly, but we've been hitting on the draft for the past, like, 6 months or so. We've been – fully diving in, maybe like briefly touching on some guys, but this is going to be our official hitting on as many guys as possible over the next couple of weeks. So we're going to be spending this week talking about the guards, next week talking about the wings, and the week after that talking about the bigs. And the reason why we're not going prospect by prospect and we're doing it by grouping is because, in my opinion, and I'd like Kevin to elaborate on this too and see if he agrees, is that this is the first draft I've covered for the Suns where it feels like there are more than like 4 to 6 players they could potentially take. And it's because of the unique dynamic of this draft class where there's so much fluidity to the spot that they're in, which is in the mid lottery, where you could conceivably talk yourself into them taking like 15 to 20 guys. And that is way too high compared to how a normal draft works. Usually, like, every 5 to 6 guys in a draft, I would say there's like a clear drop off, and you kind of don't want to, like, quote unquote reach or whatever. And last year's class was sort of like this as well, but this year is like especially the case. And it seems like that's kind of holding up the closer we get to the draft, right, Kevin? Like, guys aren't really separating themselves in this range.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's not a way for them to do that, but I think, like, there are guys listed like 30s, maybe up to 35, where I'm like, oh yeah, I mean, he could go 10, and I wouldn't say the Suns are even reaching. I guess it's more like, what do you like? The just evaluation process is so weird, and I feel like I'm not in it personally as much, just because it's so far removed in time where I actually watched some of these guys play basketball. So for me, I don't know. I'm just like very, like, cautious about making hot draft takes right now.
Right. Yeah. I'm in the same boat too, just because when we were watching these guys, there wasn't a lot of definitive stuff to take away from watching these guys, in my opinion. And we'll get into that when we talk about each guy. But I think the comparison that I can make is, if the Suns take Desmond Bain at number 10 overall, when he's a guy that's ranked in like the 20 to 40 range, that would make more sense in this class to me than it did last year with a guy like Cam Johnson, who was more of a late round prospect. I just don't, or in that same kind of range, similar kind of range. I mean, if they take Desmond Bain, they're likely passing on someone like Devin Vassell or Kyra Lewis or someone in that 10 to 20 range that people online really enjoy, and they're going to be mad that they passed on. But I don't think there's like a clear divide where, like, you have to take someone like Brandon Clark in that situation, or, like, obviously there was the potential of guys like Romeo Langford, Tyler Hero, PJ Washington has looked good in his rookie year and was someone who was in that range as well. I just don't think that there's that much of a drop off even from 10 to 35. And that's like a really huge range for this class. But I also think that it's one of the biggest qualities about this class, and something we're going to get into as we talk about the guards, and that, like, once you get past the biggest weakness of this class is star power. LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards, and James Wiseman are probably going to be the top 3 picks. We're not going to really discuss them, but beyond that, As I wrote last week on ArizonaSports.com, queuing up the combine and stuff, there's from four on, I think there's like a pretty wide range. I'm not saying like Obi Toppin's going to fall to like 16 or something. Like he's probably going to go in the top 10, but there's not a huge difference in those guys. And that's why we're going to kind of go through some groupings here. So we're going to start with the guards right now. And essentially how we're breaking this up is we're going to talk about 5 to 7 guys that we believe either fit what the Suns are looking for, fit the range of where the Suns are at, and like a combination of those kind of things where we're going to cover some guys who we believe should be in the discussion for them. So there are some guys we're not really going to be hitting on. For example, under guards, we're not going to be hitting on Nico Mannion. We're not going to be hitting on Theo Maledon. There's a couple of other guys that we're not going to be hitting on that they could take. They could trade down to take. There are other names there. But how we're going to break this up is we're going to have a couple of sections. We're going to have the big three, which are going to be the three guys in each position group that we feel like are the most likely for the Suns to take. Now, this is going to be a mix of guys like when we go over the bigs, someone like Onyeka Okongwu is going to be someone we discuss, but the odds of him being available at number 10 are pretty low. We're still going to discuss him, though, because he is someone who, if he's there at 10, there's a real discussion to be had about taking him, someone like Obi Toppin as well, Abdia under the bigs. But for guards, we're going to be talking about three guys today, and then we're each going to pick our guy, which is like quote unquote the guy that we would be pitching for the Suns to take, essentially, that is within range. So this is someone in like the 15 to 25 range, 10 to 25, 10 to 30, and so on. And then we're going to bring up a couple of dark horse names. These are the Cam Johnson selections, essentially, the guys who Desmond Bane is a name we mentioned earlier. He will come up on the wing section, but someone who is outside of the discussion of this range of the draft, but we really see potential in the Suns either reaching for or trading back for because they meet a lot of what they need, what they like, and so on. That all makes sense, Kevin. Did I say that right?
I think so.
We'll see. You guys will figure it out soon enough, I hope so. You guys seem really smart.
We're going to name some guys and talk about them, yeah.
Yeah, basically the goal is if you have not been following the draft at all, you can take these three episodes and pretty much learn everything about the guys that you should be interested in as Suns fans. I hope that makes sense. I think it does. We'll get into it right now by starting off with those big three. And in my opinion, Kevin, if I had to pick one guy that the Suns were the most likely to take, if I just had to make a prediction right now of who they would take in the draft, I don't know if he's going to be there at 10. There's a decent chance that he is, but my pick would be Tyrese Haliburton out of Iowa State. Haliburton is a guy that's kind of ranked in the, I would say, like 5 to 10 range of this draft. It feels like he's pretty comfortably in the top 10 for almost every kind of expert and every kind of big board. He's a 6'5 guard out of Iowa State, a sophomore, 6'8 wingspan. I would guess that it's a little bit bigger than that based off of watching, but I mean, these measurements that we're going off of are not off of the combine. They're from like whatever was recently available to them. 20 years old, weighs a buck 75. Haliburton last year was extremely productive. He averaged 15 points per game, 5.9 rebounds, 6.5 assists, and 2.5 steals. He shot 50% from the field, and he shot 42% from three on 5.6 attempts per game. Yowza, he only took two free throws a game, 82.2% from the free throw line. What stands out to you the most about Haliburton, Kevin? Strengths, weaknesses, like his game, so on.
Just basketball IQ and the skills to go with it. Like when we talk about all-around players, I think I don't know if there are that many in this class, and he's good at defense. Obviously he could add weight, and that might be a concern if you're saying he's going to guard twos, but he has the length. He's really smart, knows like pick and rolls, I think, better than that. Obviously I always complain about college not having enough pick and rolls, but he has great vision to go with that. I think he has more shake than people give him credit for as far as creating and working off the bounce. And then, yeah, I'm sold, even though he has a weird shot, I guess. So, I mean, I just listed off what 3-4 things. And so if he's there at 10, I don't see how other guys would be ahead of him, you know? So I think that's why I think both of us have him in the top 5 for sure.
Yeah, he has a complementary skill set. You are not drafting him to be your primary ball handler. And if you are, that means you've got a lot of scoring to go elsewhere. The number one concern with him is scoring off the bounce on like pull-ups and such, and then getting to the free throw line. He kind of gets stuck in this middle ground where he doesn't finish enough around the rim or doesn't just draw fouls enough. I believe the stat that I had initially in my first big board is that he only attempted 45 free throws in 22 games last year and was a guy who was just routinely the best player on the floor when you watched him in a lot of these games and kind of almost dominated in that fashion with the way he affected the game in so many different ways because his off-ball defense is so good that he's just consistently impacting the game in that way. And his playmaking off of the basketball IQ, as you mentioned, is probably his best trait. With his size, he just makes a lot of simple passes, but in complex ways. Like he'll do like the jump pass. He'll hit guys that are cutting that when you don't really even see them on your own screen. It's just more of like fundamental playmaking from him. And he mentioned, I believe this was him. I might be wrong because of the amount of guys I watched at the interview at the Combine. But I believe he mentioned Magic being a guy that he loves. And it's not often that you hear guys talk about the players that they look up to, like coming out of the draft, and they mention someone who's like a throwback right away. But he mentioned Magic, and I think you can kind of see that with the way that he tries to pass. It's just a lot of simple stuff that works, but he's also going to have to score more if he's going to be more of a primary guy. But Kevin, if you're the Suns and you have Devin Booker, that's not exactly a problem for you. You have a guy who can be your primary initiator, and really all you're looking for is a guy that can space the floor and make his own plays off the bounce as well. I think the discourse on these types of guys gets lost a lot because you look at him and say, you don't need him to score. You actually kind of do need him to score. Everybody on the floor kind of needs to score in today's NBA, especially when you're projecting playoff teams and so on. Like, teams will force him to score eventually. So he needs to figure that part of his game out. But even with the jumper that looks a little bit messed up, it was funny hearing him talk at the NBA Combine because someone asked a question, and I think they just they didn't say it in the right way that they intended to, but they basically asked, like, yo, your jumper looks kind of whack. The form kind of sucks. What's up with that? And he was like, well, if you watched me play and you saw the jumper and like watched it, it went in a lot. And if like teams want to force me to shoot, they're more than welcome to. And if you look at the numbers for him in college, 237 total attempts over 2 years, he shot 42.6% from three. That's on 4.2 attempts per game for that total. So he was a legitimately great catch and shoot 3-point shooter. And I think that is like that's like the extra push that he needs to like kind of be a fit on the Suns, right?
Yeah, I mean, everyone talked about Ricky Rubio's catch and shoot numbers were actually decent this year. And I mean, that's all he does need to do. He doesn't really need to do that extra stuff, but I think obviously you would like it. But yeah, he doesn't need to. Making open shots is the biggest thing if he's playing off the ball. And I think he proved that he could do that at a pretty high clip.
We'll talk about it in the last couple of weeks. As I mentioned, like, we're going to just be hitting on strictly these guys, like any news that comes up over the past couple of weeks. But there's this really weird range of the draft where it's teams that have point guards, and then all of a sudden you're hitting on the Hawks, who could really use someone like Halliburton to put next to Trae Young or back up Trae Young. It could be a little bit of both. Then Detroit, who just like, they really need guards in general, so he could fit there for sure. And then the Knicks, like, same kind of thing. They need someone to help out RJ Barrett run the offense. So I'm not exactly sure he's going to be there, but let's say he's there, Kevin, and the Suns don't take him. What could you see being a reason the Suns would look away from him? Because I think that's the most important question to ask about him, because I had him ranked number two on a specific Suns board, because everything that James Jones talks about, like, this is basically it. You've got a guy who has a skill that he is legitimately great at, which in my opinion could be the off-ball defense or the playmaking. I think the off-ball defense is legitimately like pretty fantastic. And if they don't want to count that, I think it's the playmaking and the basketball IQ, his size. And like you said, the shake is better than you think. I think it's that. And then he just does a lot of winning plays with high basketball IQ. And James Jones isn't going to draft a guy who can't shoot. He can shoot. So if there's a reason they don't take him, why do you think that is?
I have no idea. I mean, you gave me like 2 minutes to think about it. I don't know. Like if
they
you
like
don't
someone
actually...
else more, right? Like that's really it. It wouldn't be more about, it would be less about him, right?
Yeah. I mean, it would be, they love Devin Vassell's stuff. Like, I don't know what you would say. Maybe that Halliburton really couldn't transition and play the two and he would just need the ball too much. But I really don't think that's the thing, but you'd have to not believe in his defense and also not believe in his shot.
I think it would be to kind of like go off what you're saying. It would be something where they're forecasting the way the offseason in the next like year or two goes and they just don't see space for him. They have big plans already for the third guard that they're adding, / they want to add another wing. Like, I think that's the other thing. Or I guess like something we didn't talk about yet, they are like absolutely in love with Abdia or Toppin as their short-term and long-term power forward, and they think that they can come in right away and start and like that type of thing.
Yeah, and that would be two guys that are top 10, I think, falling to them, or like even top 5, you could say. So I think it would have to be weird.
We'll get into it, but I don't think he's going to be there based on what I just said, by the way. Whoever picks before them at 9-2, the Wizards, like the Wizards have a reason to pick him as well. I know they have John Wall and Bradley Beal and nothing else, but they also like they're probably going to move on from those guys eventually. So, and he can play with those guys.
Yeah, I think we're safe to say that.
Yeah, we can move on from him, but in my opinion, he's the best fit for them that could potentially be available there. And just I don't want to fall too hard into the trap of banking off of just one off season of James Jones, but we also just went from a general manager in McDonough who kind of just seemed like all over the place in terms of what he actually liked in basketball players, where it's to James Jones where we can legitimately like pinpoint the types of things that he likes to add. And like Halliburton just has a lot of them and just seemed like a really good kid talking to him too. And just everything we're reading about him is shining in that regard. We'll move on next to a guy who's going to continue to be in the discussion as well. And someone who's pretty divisive, it seems like, is probably the most divisive guy in the top 10. That's Killian Hayes out of France. He played last season professionally in Germany. Is going to turn 19 years old shortly after the draft. He's 6'5 with a 6'8 wingspan, weighs 215. Last season playing professionally in Germany over 33 total games. He averaged 11.5 points per game, 5.3 assists, 2.8 rebounds. That was on about 25 minutes a night. He shot 48% from the field, but only 29% from three. Where I'll start with this, Kevin, is do you think Hayes is too much of a quote-unquote project? Is he quote-unquote too raw for the Suns to take him?
I don't think raw is a good way to describe him because right. I think when I think of raw guys, it's like, all right, Archie Goodwin, like, I don't know what kind of player you're going to be. You're really athletic. You have tools. You can kind of dribble. You can't really shoot. Like, that's more raw in my head. He has, like, discernible skills where he has smoothness to him. He has, like, his playmaking ability already itself is kind of just like, well, he's a natural basketball player, I guess. And the real issue for me is, like, what – I don't really know what he becomes. Does he become more of a scorer? Does he become more of a passer? I think his passing, you can tell me if I'm wrong, his passing probably is ahead right now just because his shot isn't super great. I think he's going to be the type of guy where it's actually not that low of a floor just because I think his IQ and his feel for the game is already there. It's just a matter of can you make him a good enough, diverse enough scorer to really bring out like what you hope his potential is and get the most out of his playmaking too, because I think it's one of those things where he's going to take his game to a completely another level if he gets more comfortable and is an aggressive scorer. I think
his career took a really interesting turn because in my opinion, if it didn't take this turn, he would have been looked at as more of just like a pure chucker and scorer. And that would have hurt him a bit, but he really wanted to be a point guard and prioritize that with the move that he was going to make before this past season. He went to Germany and that club Ulm basically like offered him a portion of the offense and was going to say like, you're going to run a lot of offense for us. And from everything that he said, when we talked to him, I mean, there are there are political answers that he was, that any prospect is going to make when they're asked, like, do you prefer playing the two or the one? He's going to say, like, I'll do whatever the team needs to help me win. But the vibe that I got is that he really wants to be a point guard and he really wants to be a distributor. When he was asked about the Suns, he said, like, you've got a guy like Devin Booker, like, I'm just going to make sure he gets the ball and gets it in the spots that he wants. So I don't want to be too fooled by just like one media availability or whatever, but it just seems like he really has, and watching him too, it just backs up watching him that he just does a lot of point guard stuff where I think if you combine that with the potential for him as a scorer and just the way that he sort of understands how to use his footwork and just kind of like the stylish and skilled lefty stuff that he does. He obviously watches like a lot of Harden and Ginobili. He mentioned Goran Dragic recently in the playoffs as well. So I'm sure he'll have a Goran trick or two ready for next season in the NBA that he's picked up on. But the issue here is, Kevin, is that there are very clear red flags with him, but they're correctable. And this is why he's a guy who Kevin O'Connor has number one on his board. I have like somewhere around like 2, 3, 4, 5. I need to like really decide where I have him. And there's like barely any space for me between him and like 6, honestly. It's kind of like the 17 class where like after Fultz, it's like really, really even after LaMelo Ball for me. With him, there is clear all NBA, like all-star upside with him as like a 3-level scorer, primary initiator type of guy. With that being said, he goes left a whole lot and like just it's very, very clear that he relies on that in his game and that he can be game planned to a certain extent. And he's going to have to really learn how to adjust to basic concepts that are going to limit him early on in his career. The shot, as I mentioned, 29% on three. It looks good and it specifically looks really good off of the dribble. But with that in mind, he just wasn't that good of a shooter. And at a certain point, you have to look at the numbers and be concerned about the numbers. And I think that when you look at Haliburton, you mentioned, and I agreed, that his shake and stuff was pretty great. I think Hayes is, there's a lot more flash to his handle, but I don't see a lot of substance to it, if that makes sense. I think that he needs to improve that part of his game as well. I think he's a good enough athlete to have a little bit more burst to it. But with that being said, there are things where I watch him, and specifically being able to watch him 2 years ago and then this past year, he improved a ton. And that makes me truly believe in him and believe that he's going to improve a lot over like the next 2 to 3 years. I think the way that I wrote it basically is that if he improves enough over the next, I guess, like 3 to 4 years on the current trajectory that he's on right now, like he should be one of the better guards in the league within like 3 to 4 years. But the question is, how much does he correct that stuff? Which is why places like ESPN have him in the back half of the top 10 and some places even have him outside of the top 10. Where do you land on him as a whole? Which side do you agree with more?
I think it's more back half for me. I'm still kind of torn on again what he's really good at, and like you can tell me more about defensively. I don't know how great he is there. He has an interesting body type just because he's kind of thicker dude.
He's like eyes,
yeah. So I mean, I like the offensive package. I just don't know like how elite it can be if it's like, okay, he goes left and James Harden goes left, but James Harden's a ridiculous human being and can get away with it. He picks up his dribble sometimes, like just not knowing what to do. I don't know. It's, to me, it's he, like, again, to your question about what Ra is, it's, he has a decent feel for basketball and he has sprinklings of skills here and there, but I just don't know as a complete package, like, okay, I can lean on this. Like, I know you're going to be good at this. So to me, especially when you're talking about a guy who might need to be a point guard, those are a little concerning to me.
If he can guard his position and improve his shot, he's exactly what you want next to Devin Booker. People say Haliburton's exactly what you want next to Devin Booker. I actually disagree. I want someone who can be not as much of a scoring threat as Devin, because that's impossible, but someone that's a lot more of a scoring threat than Rubio, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So if he's an average 3-point shooter and he can like really be a guy that scores confidently like 18 to 20 points per game and averages like 6 to 8 assists a game, which I think that that part's going to be easier for him. I think his passing and his vision and just like feel for skip passes and things like that are really good. That's where I see kind of like the The part of like Fultz and Ball's game that I really liked looking back to that draft again, that like just at this level, he seems to understand playmaking really well already, and he'll be able to adjust to defenses fine on that regard. But I think he's really interesting for the Suns in terms of that, but also like the short term and like win now kind of thing. Like, would they trust him with minutes right away? Would Monty trust him with minutes right away? I don't really know. And that's where it gets kind of clunky. I honestly don't know if they would take him if he was there. I think that they would like someone better if I had to guess right now. Where do you land?
Yeah, he doesn't fit that stereotype that we keep talking about for James Jones, but you know.
Speaking of the stereotype for the front office, Cole Anthony played in the ACC last year. We're going to talk about Cole Anthony as the third guy. In my opinion, there isn't really a real third guy to talk about here. I think there's a bit of a drop here, but with Cole Anthony, 6'3", a wingspan around like 6'4", 6'5", he's 20 years old, weighs 190. He had a real opportunity to take a questionable North Carolina team and really carry it. And I know that sounds like putting a lot of weight on him, but I put that weight on him because he was a guy that I watched in like the McDonald's All-American game, and I was like, oh, this is going to be the number one pick in the draft next year. Just watching his skill and watching the way that he moved with the ball and just ran the show as like a primary initiator, ball handler, point guard type of guy. I was like, oh, this is the number one pick in the draft next year. Like, it's not going to be any of these other guys. It's going to be him. He proceeded to shoot 38% from the field. He shot 35% from three. He had 4.0 assists per game to 3.5 turnovers per game. That is, Kevin, not a good ratio. 18.5 points per game, so he did fill it up, and he rebounded and produced in terms of rebounding 5.7 assists or 5.7 rebounds, and then 4.0 assists per game, a steal 0.3 per game as well. The numbers back up the tape, Kevin. I did not like going back and watching him, and I just don't really see it from – I don't see what you're supposed to take from his season. We should mention that he had a partially torn meniscus during this season, and that really seemed to affect his burst. But with that being said, if you watched him back a year further, and the people who watch more high school than me have like confirmed to me that there was burst questions beforehand. And I just see a guy who's skilled – but I just don't think he's very good right now. I don't know how else to put it.
So I'll back up and give him a bunch of benefits of the doubts and trying to convince you. So that team really wasn't that bad. Like, didn't they lose? Like, it was like 7 in a row or something when he was hurt. It might've been more, I don't remember. Cause again, memory, long time ago. He really did have to like carry that much weight. You can explain away the turnovers if you don't look at them in that regard. You can explain away, you know, 4 assists is whatever for a guy who needs to create. You can explain away bad shooting nights for he's just trying to get his team going and stay in it. But I mean, that's a lot of explaining away to me. And when you look at a guy like, okay, I'm pulling this just because it's James Jones and it's North Carolina, but Kobe White like came to the NBA and like, yeah, the Suns could have used that third guard who's just going to light it up, because he obviously had some periods of time where he would light it up for the Bulls, but what is he after that? And if you have these other guys that we've been talking about and other guys we're going to talk about, then how much do you value kind of that third guard where – is he a starting point guard in the NBA? I'm not super sure. I think he plays like he's Lou Williams. Can he change once that pressure to score and to carry the load is not on him? Like, there were also basketball, like he wants to get his concerns. I think I read from some guys or heard on podcasts. So you can see that in how he plays. And so when I say all that and try to give him the benefit of the doubt, it's hard when you say all those things. And again, like, he can come back to the NBA and prove everyone wrong, but that's why he was the number one pick on a lot of boards heading into the year. Now where he is maybe top 15.
Kobe had some pop to his game, right? Like, when you watched him in college, it was like, man, like, when he gets going, he really gets going. I just didn't see that enough from Anthony at all. And again, like, a worse team is not going to help him. But he's an example to me of a guy where I watch him off the dribble, and when he was scoring and making his moves, it didn't feel like he was creating enough separation. It felt like he was barely getting by his guys when he was scoring. Kobe had a lot more zip to him. I think that's the better word than pop, like the zip to him getting to the rim and stuff.
I don't know, man. Pop was good.
Okay. I'll keep it going with the adjectives then, and just like just try and
his
stick
punch,
with
punch. He had more punch, yeah.
Oh, pizzazz?
Pizzazz.
Nice. I don't think Cole Anthony has the pizzazz for the Suns. I don't. If they take him, I will be utterly befuddled just because it doesn't really line up with what they're looking for. They must just, that would be an example to me of like individual workout, interview, looking back through his coaches and all that kind of stuff. Just he flew off the charts for them and that really separated him. He's going to be available when they pick. So maybe Anthony moves up in that range of teams I talked about with a guard, but I don't really think he's the guy. Do you want to move
James
on?
Did James Jones ever play or coach or anything against Greg Anthony? Because that's definitely going to be like, oh, I talked to his dad. His dad says he's great.
You're making me depressed. I want to move on. I'm being mean.
Okay.
I'm going to make us move on. You're bullying us. Stop, Kevin.
Go ahead.
Our guy. Let's talk about our guy, and I'm going to say our guy instead of your guy or my guy, because we kind of agreed that there's one guy to us. Tyrese Maxey isn't someone we're really going to talk about. That's a lot of what we just discussed with Cole Anthony and kind of with Killian Hayes. Like, what exactly is he great at? He was inefficient. There's just like questions there in terms of I think the thing I keep coming back to, because you only need to change one letter in his last name to get there, is Moxey. Like, he just has like a lot of energy to his game that makes you like believe in the kid, Maxey, but beyond like the Kentucky guard joke and meme, I don't really see it. So he's not really someone we're going to talk about here. I mentioned Mannion earlier. We are going to talk about RJ Hampton in a bit, just to kind of bring him up because he is in this range consistently. But I think the one guy we can agree on that we really need to discuss that could be a possibility here is Kyra Lewis, right?
Yeah.
He's my guy out of the range of this, looking at guys that they could seriously potentially take here. I know everyone, I've talked about Grant Riller a ton, and I'm going to get into him later. But in terms of like realistically looking at guys in this range, Kyra Lewis is a guy that's ranked about like not 15 to 20 for a lot of people. I think he's a top 10 guy. He's a guard out of Alabama. Really was better in his sophomore year, 6'3", 6'6", wingspan, 19 years old. Only weighs a buck 65. We've seen a lot of guys overcome that, though, recently, and people like me especially who thought De'Aaron Fox was too skinny looks stupid, so I'm kind of done looking at weight as a minus. Just the numbers really jumped in his sophomore year. He averaged 18.5 points per game, 4.8 rebounds, 5.2 assists, 1.8 steals. That jumped a lot. He shot 45.9% from the field and 36.6% from three on 4.9 attempts per game over his two seasons, shooting 304 threes. He shot 36.2%, got to the rim 4.2 times this year at 80.2%. To me, Kevin, this is what is he truly great at? Is the question beyond him being extremely fast. But I see a guy who just is good at a lot of good to passable at a ton of things. And if he continues to improve like this in 2 years, I think he could already be like a good NBA point guard within a year or two, and then really explode in a couple of years. I think there's a ton of clear upside to him.
Yeah, the athleticism's crazy. Like, I think the speed thing matters on defense too. Like, if he gains however much weight, but if you're like that pesky and that athletic, I think he's decent, like, I don't know if he gets more of his steals, like jumping passing lanes or whatever on the ball, but I think he has potential to not be terrible there, even though he's small in weight. And then you just look across the board, like how well he can score at every level. He's a pretty good assist guy. Like I really like, he just brings that element in game where you throw him on a basketball court and someone's going to be like, this guy's in the scouting report for a reason, even if he's like the third guy to start and he's a little rough around the edges. As a true point guard, like, teams are going to have to scout for him and be like, this dude's going to push the ball a lot. We need to be careful with this. And like for the Suns' purposes, someone who can create off the dribble, who can push the tempo, who can take stuff Obviously off book, in like that big of a way, because like even Halliburton, Hayes, we talked about it, like they have some question marks. I think you can tell me that I'm exaggerating, but I think Lewis probably has more like, oh, just give him the ball and he's gonna do something.
Correct.
Those guys. Okay. Yeah.
He's just more well-rounded. And I think, I don't want to confuse people again, by well-rounded, I mean that like his pick and roll reads and like just basic run and offense stuff is more of like a C minus to a C right now. It's really not that great. His pull-up shooting is like in that same kind of space, but like the line drive attacks to the rim and like creating space from a defender, like that's a B plus right now. He's really great at it. And then obviously like the benefits to having a speedy point guard who can push and transition and just like really put pressure on the defense. Like you said, scouting report, they are going to be aware of him when he's on the court. Even if he comes off the bench as a rookie next year, people are going to know about him. Like, watch out for the speed with this guy. He is going to run downhill at you quickly. The defense falls asleep off ball a bit. We've seen that with him quite a bit. On ball was, I don't want to say less encouraging than I expected, but I think that he needs to continue to emphasize that in his development, because he could be really great there and he shows signs of being really great, but the consistency just isn't really there. And I just think this is someone I look at who needs time, but would clearly benefit from the time and the growth going on. When we talked about Hayes and Halliburton and those types of guys, Halliburton specifically, I mentioned like this actually isn't the type of guy that you want next to Book 100%, because you need someone who is like I said, puts pressure on the defense and is like a true threat. I think that Lewis is a true threat in the way that Halliburton isn't. I'm not saying that he's a better prospect. I don't think he's a better prospect, but I think that this is the ultimate, like if you talk to the kid, if you watch him work out, if he fits in with what you guys want, I think that he is the guy that they should take over really anyone else that's available on the board, because if they trust Monty and they trust their assistant coaching and player development and all that kind of stuff, and everything lines up where it needs to in terms of you picking to draft a guy, I don't think they're really going to have someone better available than him. Because if you just believe in everything that's there and believe that you can get the most out of this kid, then he's going to be very good for them. And just that change of pace off the bench anyway, even if they don't look at him, if they look at him as more of a third guard than like the point guard of the future, even as just a third guard, that change of pace, if he could just kind of, and this is mentioning a very specific player who like almost no one brings it, but just be kind of like a Marcus Smart. And if I want to go way down, just be like a TJ McConnell annoying pest guy off the bench with your speed and like tenacity. And I think he's shown that in games actually, which is why I bring it up. Just the consistency is what I wanted to see, because I was almost ready to label him as that. Like he can kind of be a pest and like a pain in the butt for a lot of teams. When he was playing against them, but then some nights it wasn't there too. So I have to mention that, but I really think there's a lot there to him. To go with the same question, I guess, since I'm talking a lot about what I like about him, what do you think would shy away from the Suns shy away from him, Kevin? Why would that be if they did?
Yeah, it'd be just like that inconsistency. Defense, you worry about his size already, and then if you're not putting effort in, then I don't know. Is he really a lead guard? And then I think you look at, again, what else is on the board at that point, and it's like, okay, if this guy, if we think that he might be a starting point guard, then that's different than saying, like, he's going to be the third guard, and, like, we're fine with that. But if there's another guy on the board like Hayes, and it's like, this guy's upside's obviously a starter, then that kind of changes – what he's up against at that number 10 slot. So I think, yeah, it's like, I love his potential as like, again, maybe that change up guard, but who else is on the board? Does he really project as a starter?
Yeah. And something I covered that in terms of like statistical things lining up from previous drafts, what I really liked was looking at the percentage of shots that he takes at the rim and then how he shoots at the rim. He took 45% of his shots at the rim this year, and he shot 58% there. And when you look at the point guards in the past couple of drafts that lined up with his type of outlook, he matched up more with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and De'Aaron Fox and Ja Morant than some of the other kind of iffier point guards in that range. Like off the top of my head, someone like Kobe White, for example, last year. And then looking back even like a further couple of years, I remember looking at pretty much like the last like 10 to 15 point guards to go in like the top 10 or the lottery. and his numbers like were in the upper echelon in that grouping, and that needs to be a really good point of his game. So the fact that statistically it was there in college was important to me. I really like him. I think that he's someone who, when they are up at number 10, I think that he is going to be one of the five best available choices for them. Is he going to be number one for them? I'm not quite sure, because like I said, a lot has to go through, but I mean, after someone like Halliburton, and we're going to talk about a couple of the wings, there might be a big that slips, but I think that he has to be in the discussion and is someone that they should really have an interest in. I hope they dive deep on him and really like dig in, because they could get something special out of him if they do. Do you want to talk about RJ Hampton now? What's up? What's going on over there? Why do we not like him, Kevin?
So like the weird thing about him, and you probably have watched a ton more film than me, but he's kind of like playing in Australia is just weird. And I don't know how to conceptualize the numbers and all that, that you see, because
do you want me sorry to interrupt. I should stick with the format here. Sorry. 6'5", 6'7" wingspan, 19 years old, 185, a guard, quote unquote, I guess, but I don't really understand what kind of guard he's supposed to be. I guess it's his scoring, but a lot of athletic and athleticism kind of stuff where it's like, if he figures this out, if he figures that out, he can be great. In New Zealand, playing there in that league last year in the NBL, he averaged 8.8 points per game, 2.4 assists, 3.9 rebounds. He played 20.6 minutes a game, 40.7% from the field, 29.5% from three. To go on, Kevin, that league is kind of weird, you were saying?
Yeah, I mean, like LaMelo Ball goes there, puts up a bunch of numbers, and then he's kind of the opposite, where his numbers are pretty bad, awful. But like we were talking about before this podcast, he's rising up boards somehow. Like I know people, he's been on everyone's radar because he was a high top level recruit before he decided to go overseas. But I just don't know. Like where is he? He's up in the ringers. He's like top 15 on ESPN.
So Vecini did some digging, and apparently he's worked on his shot a lot in the off season, and he liked enough of what he saw there and going back in the film, and he moved him up to 7 on his board. And yeah. I think just a lot of that has to do with like this class, right? Like Kevin O'Connor having Tyrell Terry in his top 10, it doesn't surprise me. Like, you can have anyone in your top 10. Like, I don't think anyone should be surprised that I have Grant Riller in my top 10. Like, you're going to fall in love with someone and convince yourself that this guy has a lot more upside, because a lot of this class just doesn't have it.
Yeah, and, like, Hampton, like, athletically is maybe one of the – he's definitely a top 10 athlete, I think, in this draft. I think people see him more as a point guard, and you look at it, and it's not impressive when you average 2.4 assists, but he also didn't turn it over – a whole lot, 1.5 a game. And that's, I think it's only 15 games of evidence there. I don't know. It's interesting to me just because I think the Suns did talk to him, if I'm not mistaken. He said that during one of these Zoom interviews. And that's interesting because it's the Suns and he's obviously overseas, even if they knew him before. But if he's a good kid and he's that good of an athlete and people still have kind of see the stock being there, then we have to mention him, I guess.
We do have to mention him. I think it's important to mention him because he's in the range, but with that in mind, I just raw athlete, what exactly is he doing on the ball? Like especially with the wing group that we're going to, I think he's more of a wing than a guard, in my opinion, just looking at what he is right now. And just looking at that group specifically, how much you can get out of someone like Nesmith, obviously even Okoro with the shooting that's down, like just the amount of skills that you can get out of guys. I don't know what skill you're getting out of RJ Hampton outside of like, he's an athlete who can like score off the bounce a bit and like score on jumpers and efficiently. I don't really understand what else you're getting out of him.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Yeah, me neither. and that would be a reason not to draft a prospect, in my opinion. That's just our opinions, though.
That is our opinion.
We'll go rapid fire here. A couple of guys more towards the first round bubble, like the 20s that we're interested in. This is like the dark horse section. I'm going to start off with Grant Riller. I've talked about him on here a little bit. I've written a lot about him because he's in the top 10 of my own board, and then he's in the top 10 for me on the Suns board. Last year for Charleston, he averaged 22 points per game. 5.1 rebounds, 4 assists a game. He shot 50% from the field, 36% from three. and 83% from the line on 6.9 attempts per game. That is awfully nice at the free throw line, Kevin. He gets there a lot. To me, he is the best offensive guard in this class, and I don't think it's particularly close. That might be a controversial take, especially with someone like Anthony Edwards right now. I think that Anthony Edwards is the far better prospect. Like, you won't see me saying that it's close between them as prospects, but in terms of their skill at this moment, I think that Grant Riller is a true three-level scorer right now. He's the best driver in the class, without a doubt. He finishes incredibly well around the rim with just the amount of variety in his finishes he does. Shooting off the dribble is not a problem for him. He played a lot off the ball because they ran a couple guards there at Charleston consistently. So he got a lot of catch and shoot looks, and that looked fine to me as well. He has really shifty, quick footwork to like set up some of the mid-range looks, and is just he's a bucket, man. And I cannot say this enough. He really got screwed by this, because if he would have gone to the combine and gone through group workouts and been able to do all this kind of stuff, or people saw him up close, he got in those scrimmages, he would have been a borderline lottery pick, in my opinion, and I don't think it's going to quite happen for him, unfortunately. The only real negative I see here on him is the competition and people questioning his competition, and obviously he's a stocky kid at that size, so it's not really on his like strength or anything, but just I guess some people might think he's like a step slow. But the thing that I looked at and I brought up on here a couple months ago is that when I looked at those numbers and like getting to the line and this amount of scoring and stuff, the only guys that have done that have been drafted in the first round in like the past 10 years. It's him, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Jimmer, and Ja Morant. And like, you can make Jimmer jokes and stuff, but Jimmer was an incredible college basketball player, like one of the best we've ever seen. So just to put it on that level in terms of the efficiency and scoring and usage and stuff, there's just not a lot of guys like this. What's wrong with me, Kevin? Why aren't the Suns going to take him? What am I missing here?
Not ACC.
Oh, dang it. Of course. I mean, you draft him for instant impact, and that's what the Suns like. Is his basketball IQ not high enough? What have you seen from him as a guard who can like distribute? It's there, but it's elementary, right?
Yeah, it's like first level, like. But again, like Halliburton, you were saying, you know, he's more creating good angles to get passes off. And I see maybe not to that advanced level, but it's just like, all right, I'm driving and some guy steps in front. I'm going to kick to the open three. And like, you watch the finals right now. The Miami Heat don't have a lot of great ball handlers, but like, hey, if Duncan Robinson can do that, that's fine. If he can take one dribble and kick out, that's fine. And even from the point guard spot, like, especially with the with Devin Booker, like you don't need advanced necessarily.
No, you don't. And obviously this would be a guy who, if the Suns had a second round pick, I guess I should have mentioned that at the top, they don't have a second round pick. But if they're looking to trade back for whatever reason, this would be the number one guy on my list. I just think that they need an offensive threat like this off of the bench. And even if he's not just like a floor general who can like run your second unit or whatever, I don't really think that's much of a concern. I just think you need offense on this team, and you need it in terms of threats off the bounce. I think that he's just a huge, huge plus for them if they were able to draft him and get a hold of him. It's unrealistic to expect them to take him at 10, but he's someone that I really like. Is there anyone that jumps out to you that's like not quite in the discussion at this range, but you want to bring up briefly?
I'm just going to cheat and say Josh Green as a guard. I know you can say he's a wing, but he's kind of like, I think he has potential to be kind of the 3-and-D guy with a little more playmaking abilities maybe than people give him credit for, just because he didn't have the ball in his hands, have the opportunity to like make like more freestyle decisions at Arizona, I guess is the best way to say it. But I mean, he's athletic. He has length. He's probably on the thin side to like really be able to play like small forward or power forward definitely right now. So I don't know if you can really say he's a wing, but I think like if he's, you know, even if he's kind of locked into the 2-3, I think the Suns could push more Mikal, more Cam to the 4, and it would be fine. But yeah, I just like his, like he's a good kid, works hard, really tries on defense. And the shot, it's not, I think it was 36%, but it was pretty looking at least. And he, I think as a step shooter, has a lot of promise. So I'll just say him because he's an NBA athlete for sure. And again, if where you just want those certain skills that fit this team, I think that, you know, James Jones might like that. And Arizona is a usually a good college basketball team, at least decent.
I'll wrap with the Tucson theme. I agree on Josh Green, by the way. I think he was someone that I wanted to bring up in the wing group, just kind of on the back half. But I think we should bring him up on the next episode and just kind of compare him to a couple of the other guys in this class. Because when you're looking at guys like Patrick Williams and Bay and Nesmith and Vassell and Okoro that we bring up, like he's not that far away from those guys, and it's kind of into what I was saying at the top. But yes, I'm going to bring up Nico Mannion. I really do believe that his passing and just skill on the ball and scoring prowess is there. I think that the skills are there. The talent is there. Now is like the separation, athleticism, all that kind of stuff, like defensive. I don't know. I thought on defense, and you can speak to this too, watching a lot of U of A games like me, I thought defensively, like he tried and he worked and like the work ethic is there. Now, is he going to get blown by a bit? Like, I think so. Did he finish terribly around the rim and look scared of it by the second half of the season? Yes, and that's a huge concern and why he's not a lottery pick. But I do think that there's high basketball IQ, skill. You have a couple things that he's good at. I really do believe that, like, what you need an NBA point guard to do today, he has the skill to do it.
Yeah. Dude, he's closer to TJ McConnell than people think.
Right.
We're going to keep the Arizona theme going, but TJ McConnell is also a pretty darn good backup point guard in the league. So I don't know. I wouldn't completely say that's crazy, but yeah, it's a little high.
It is a little high for sure. Yeah. It's more of a trade back, or if they trade back in, and every year we fall into like the, I don't want to call it annoying, but just kind of like the here are a couple of guys they should try to trade back into the second round. Based on what's been happening with the Suns past couple of months, I do not expect them to go out and give cash for a second-round pick right now. Maybe they give up future second-rounders, but they already have another future second-rounder that's gone. I don't really see the path to doing that, but I do see like guys in this class that do make sense for them that are around that range. Isaiah Joe from Arkansas is a guy that I haven't watched a lot of. I've only seen a game or two of him so far, and I'm going to try and watch more of him before the draft. But he's a name I wanted to bring up who a lot of people say, you've got like a really good three-point shooter, smart player, better defender than you think. Maladon is someone that I've written about a little bit out of France. So just to kind of put a wrap on that, I'll mention Tyshawn Alexander for Jacob out of Creighton. Just like intangibles, kind of defense, winner, blah, blah, blah. I have my national media hat on now in terms of describing prospects, but that's Maxi, but just a lot more of like winning plays all across the court, and it's someone I'm going to watch more of and maybe should be more in the discussion in like our quote-unquote dark horse range. We talked about a lot of guys there, Kevin. I'm proud of us. We did it.
We rolled through it, yes.
We really did. All right, everyone, we'll be back next week to talk about wings, and then the week after that we'll talk about the big men as we roll on in our draft preview stuff that's going to keep coming because, boy, do we bring stuff on this podcast. Okay, that was weird. Bye!